Michelle Pawlowski, litigation associate attorney, Vogel Zenglong. We were just talking how much the city's buzzing today.
Totally buzzing. It is beautiful outside. Everyone's out. Market day's on the north side. It is a gorgeous day.
Do you guys live in the city or are you out in the burbs?
I'm out in the burbs. I'm in the town that I grew up in, Northbrook. Amazing.
I'm out in Downers Grove. We lived in the city for a while and I miss it. And it's days like this. I mean, I get to come in, obviously, for the radio all the time. But on a Saturday afternoon when people are buzzing, it makes me happy to live where we live.
Yeah, I loved going on the Riverwalk for a little bit before coming up here. It is just a stunning day.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, and I hope everyone's enjoying. If you're driving around, now the traffic not as fun out there as we heard Sylvia mention. So everyone just pack a little patience, and we're going to learn a little bit about, asbestos litigation. I know that isn't the most fun topic, Michelle. It is a sad reality that a lot of people live with, but I think what probably drives you and all the people at Vogelzang is that, it's usually in a tragic situation. There's silver linings, there's hope, there's justice that is provided to families when they have Vogelzang in their corner, right?
Absolutely. And when I show up at my client's doorstep, we try to meet them in person as much as we can. You're kind of in there in a time of crisis. So when you're talking to them, they've just been diagnosed with lung cancer, with mesothelioma. You're learning their life story. But you're also there to help them obtain money for their family and obtain justice. And giving that little glimmer of hope while they're going through so much is really an amazing experience to bond with someone that way.
Right. It's in this justice system, money is the only solution. I don't want to say it like that, but you can't give people back years, right? You can't give people back the ability to pick up their grandkids longer than they're going to be able to, perhaps because of their disease. This is what we have in this system, and this does provide college education for kids. It provides a family with replacing the income that they've lost from someone that has no longer able to work because of the damage that they received from companies who knew that they were exposed to things that they shouldn't have been exposed to, right?
Yes. And sometimes clients are hesitant to get involved in that because of the amount of time it can take, the amount of energy that it can take when they need to do chemo and immunotherapy. But I remind them that you're doing this for you and you're doing this for your whole family. Yeah. It is sometimes in many cases can create generational wealth. Like you said, can get those kids through college. Or if you have older kids, gives those grandkids a great cushion of wealth in the future. So especially as a female attorney, sometimes walking in that doorstep, you almost want to take on a caretaker role. But you have to remind yourself to shut that off, and you're there for the purpose of helping them receive justice, help them receive monetary gain for the injury that they've incurred.
Yeah. I mean, they're not a monolith, people that have lung cancer or asbestos because of asbestos have mesothelioma. But a lot of them were blue-collar workers who work hard, who work long hours in hard conditions, some of them military people. The last thing they want to do is go take a bunch of money from a company that just isn't in there. I'm sure that is a stigma for a lot of them to even call you guys as well, too.
It definitely is. And I hear that a lot from our military service members, from the Navy. We have many, many Navy clients, from our union members. You know, I've heard the term money grab sometimes, where they think that they're just showing up to sue without reason. And obviously that's not what we do. But then I explained to them, this is money that you're owed. This injury happened to you 30, 40, 50 years ago and is just showing up now. You were exposed to asbestos so long ago and the injury is just showing up now. So you deserve this. You essentially earn this through all of your work. And this is money that you're owed. We just need to reach the right defendants for it.
Right, because the defendants, when you find out who they are, what perpetrated this instance, they are not an innocent company that had no idea that asbestos could cause problems, right? I think that some people think, well, it was so long ago, nobody knew. No, these companies, you're able to demonstrate, knew that they were sending workers into harm's way, right?
Yes, and companies, so when you're thinking about the 60s, 70s, 80s, you're also encountering clients who, obviously, the internet was not created yet.
True, yes.
So your only recourse in finding out about how asbestos exposure is in the workplace is from your employer or doing research at, a library.
The library, right.
So these corporations, many of them had their own personal libraries, and had a lot of literature on the impact that asbestos had creating lung cancer and mesothelioma. So they had that knowledge and a duty to warn the workers, and many of them did not.
Right. Let's just reset for people who maybe are like, wait, what are all these terms we're throwing around? So generally speaking, I know, I think everyone's heard of the term asbestos, but what is it? Just rewind that for us.
Yeah. So asbestos has been used for centuries. It is a very cheap mineral that is mined from the ground. And it is non-flammable. So that's why you see it in these Navy ships. You see it in refineries, at steel mills, protecting different pieces of equipment so that they don't blaze into fire.
Which, if that was all that we had to write about asbestos, you could see why people thought it was a miracle. I mean, it was in like our hair dryers, right, at some point.
Yes.
It was everywhere because it was, I mean, this, it didn't start on fire despite being exposed to so much high temperature.
Yes. And so while it does also help with high temperature, different types of industry, it also was added by many companies as a just general cheap additive, like with joint compound, with talcum, certain paints that was contaminated with asbestos.
What do you mean just added? Just like to add bulk to something?
Yes, sometimes to add bulk or to floor tile, or different elements like that. Or with friction breaks. That's more of the heating element to keep breaks from setting a fire. So asbestos is very was very prevalent, not as much anymore, thank goodness. But when it was prevalent, it was used in so many different industries.
And I mean, it's still in places. I think people know that. Mm-hmm. But if it is just kind of chilling there or sitting there, it, for the most part, isn't harmful right now, right?
Correct. If it is undisturbed, then you are not likely to be exposed to asbestos. So if you have asbestos insulation in your home, you would want to hire a professional crew to come and remove it. And do not disturb it yourself. That's the same with floor tile. Have it get tested. Ask a flooring specialist to get it tested before removing it or exposing yourself to it.
But of course, so many workers were moving it, disturbing it, using it in a way in which, what, it broke down and just gets into your respiratory system?
Yes. So actually, many different types of asbestos are what's called friable. So when you disturb it, it gets into the air, and those pieces of asbestos are microscopic. They get into your lungs and they scrape at your lungs and create a sort of pulmonary fibrosis, which is a thick lining that builds up, and it makes it more and more difficult to breathe. And that's how many of our clients ended up with asbestosis, or it could go on to develop lung cancer or mesothelioma.
Mesothelioma, the only known cause of it is asbestos, right?
That's correct. Yes. Currently, the only known cause is asbestos exposure.
So if someone calls you guys and they have mesothelioma, you now begin an investigation, I imagine, to try and figure out where the exposure came from.
Yes. And it's interesting because in the past, when we've had female clients and they didn't work in the trades or industry, it was a big question mark. Where could you have possibly been exposed to asbestos? Sometimes the answer to that is they had a husband or spouse who worked in the trades and brought that asbestos home on their clothes and then exposed the wife while the wife was doing laundry, or through use of talcum powder. Talcum used in makeup, used in foot powder, used in baby powder, throughout the world had been contaminated with asbestos because talcum and asbestos grow naturally together. So when that talcum was mined and then used in powders, many women who have been diagnosed with mesothelioma now have answers that their long-term talcum powder use has contributed to cause their mesothelioma.
The idea of that they were washing their husband's work clothes and asbestos went into their respiratory system and decades later turned into mesothelioma is cruel enough, but it's also ironic, I imagine, in that their husband, who worked around it maybe more directly for longer periods of time, may not have developed mesothelioma. There's no one for one here, which should be a relief to some people who may have been exposed at some point. You may be okay. In fact, a lot of people are okay the rest of their life. There's this cruel aspect to it that is seemingly somewhat random, right?
Yes. I think the American Cancer Society reported that there's about 3,000 diagnoses of mesothelioma per year in the United States, which is very, very low. So just because you've been exposed to asbestos certainly does not mean that you are going to develop mesothelioma, but it is the only known cause. And with women who have husbands who were in the trades and then exposed through laundering their clothes, that is, you know, a huge indicator of where they would have been exposed.
That latency period is, I'm first going to say, I'm glad it's not immediate, because you live a life, or some people are able to live decades with no symptoms. Okay, then let's put that in the good category. But that latency also, I think, probably has contributed to the misuse of it for so long. And also, I imagine a lot of people dying without ever getting justice because they didn't know what the exposure was, what it was, and because it happens quickly too when you get it. Talk a little bit about the trouble that latency period provides people.
Yeah, I mean, there's been what we would consider epidemics that have happened at various plants in the Chicagoland area and Illinois and Midwest area in general, where you see 50, 60, 70 mesothelioma diagnoses coming out of one plant. Hmm. And all of those people don't know about each other usually. Mesothelioma acts very fast. Sometimes you only have a year or less to live once you receive that diagnosis, depending on, you know, the stage and treatment at the time you're diagnosed. So, you know, when you have a group of people that are all affected but don't know about each other, it's hard to understand the breadth and how many people it affects when one group of people has been impacted that much.
And some people say, well, how is that possible? 70 people for one plant. Well, let's paint a picture. That's probably spread over a couple of years. A lot of these guys have probably gone on to retirement, may not live anywhere near where they used to work by. And then, like you're saying, it goes so quickly that there wasn't a time to establish a network where people know that this is an issue. And then by the time you get to 50 or 70, you've lost all those people before you can even get to the bottom of what happened.
Yes. And then corporations aren't held as accountable as they should be. You know, you can bring lawsuits at the time those people are injured, but what really should have happened is they should have removed that asbestos back in the 60s, 70s, 80s when these people were first exposed. But due to that latency period where it takes 20, 30, 50 years for lung cancer or mesothelioma to occur after that asbestos exposure, there's not as much of that push for those corporations to make a change back in that day.
Yeah, there's not the immediacy that you see from other pushes against products out there that cause an immediate harm, and then people rally behind the cause. The people are living. They go to Congress. They all advocate for this against the company, and we see quick action. You're right. That doesn't happen when there's that long break. I wonder, like, how many defendants do you guys end up finding for certain clients to be able to go after? Because is it just the work site where they worked? Is it who brought in the asbestos? Is it, I don't know, you walk us through that.
Sure. I'm going to give you the typical attorney answer of it depends, but to walk you through
we get it a lot on this show. Yeah, we're used to it.
Yeah. I bet. But to walk you through some scenarios, you know, if you have someone who's at a refinery or at a steel mill, we have such a long history of knowledge of different steel mills around these Midwestern parts, such as U.S. Steel or, you know, different mills that are nearby. We know the manufacturers of different possibly boilers or pumps or valves that our clients would have worked on or around. It doesn't need to be direct hands-on work. It can also be work being done in their vicinity that would have contained or likely contained asbestos that would have been disturbed that they would have breathed in.
So because you guys have done this many times, you're able to pretty closely, and again, every case is different, but hey, if you knew you were at U.S. Steel from these years to these years, you've either already had these people as defendant or at least have the knowledge of, well, here's where that boiler came from, here's where this pipe manufacturer is, and this is where you're able to find out where. And this isn't then a byproduct of the question, are some of these places still in business? I mean, with that latency period, is it harder to find defendants that you can even sue and get money from?
Many of these defendants are still in business. They are still viable. There are, however, many defendants who aren't still in business and went bankrupt due to the amount of asbestos litigation they were under and pressure they were under. So what happens after they go bankrupt is many times they're required to form a bankruptcy trust. So we actually have a whole separate department at Vogel Zeng Law, our bankruptcy trust attorneys, where they help our clients apply to these trusts and obtain money from trusts in a different way than we see in our litigation sector. And as a part of the litigation section of our firm myself, there's a lot of research, what's called discovery. So questions we send to the defendants to figure out what was on site, what would have been there at the time our clients were there, and determining what they could or were most likely exposed to. And of course, we get a lot of information from our clients. They're very knowledgeable.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Do you sometimes, well, actually, let me take a pause here. We're going to take a break and we got the news because I don't want to start going down another avenue, which is going to take a while to get through. But I'm curious, and you can start prepping for it. Do some people come to you and say, I have mesothelioma. I have no idea where I got it from. Walk us through, after the break in the news, how you even begin to talk through that. 312-981-7200 is our questions. Oh, where do you want people to go? Is the website the best place to kind of get started for people that might want to have a conversation with you all?
Absolutely. Or call our direct line. 312-201-4104 is my direct line. You can call that at any time.
Can you give that number one more time, please, Michelle?
312-201-4104.
All right, we'll continue this conversation with Michelle Pawlowski at Vogel Zeng Law after this on WGN. 312-981-7200 if you've got any questions. We got a few more minutes with Vogel Zeng Law, who we've been hearing from for a couple years on this show, and it's always informative. And Michelle, you must always reach people still who, because I think a lot of people think, well, asbestos hasn't been used forever now. There's a long latency period. It hasn't actually been all that long since a lot of these companies stopped using it. Unfortunately, mesothelioma diagnoses are going to continue for some time, right?
Yes. And I know we were, before the break, you know, there you were talking about how sometimes people call in without not knowing how they could have been exposed. Yeah. And that's when you start going into the obscure answers. Okay. So usually when they say they don't know how they're exposed, I think, okay, you didn't work in the trades, probably not a mechanic, probably, you know, not working at any like electrical sites, mm-hmm. or not an electrician. So then I go to one is, okay, have you ever shot a gun before?
Oh, wow.
Especially a shotgun, because many different shotgun shells used to contain asbestos. So we find out what years maybe you might have used a shotgun, huh. What shotgun brands. That's one question we get into.
Hold on. I got to stop there for a second. Now, and again, I don't want to scare people because I know there's probably some gun owners or users who are like, what? Just because you shoot a shotgun once or twice or even frequently doesn't mean, and it had asbestos in it, doesn't mean you're going to get mesothelioma.
Exactly. And that's the same for people in the trades who are at these big industrial sites. Just because you've been exposed does not mean that you will develop mesothelioma. But when we're looking for a cause, when someone does get that diagnosis.
Because you know it's from asbestos.
Yes.
And so what, the shotgun shell, the poof of smoke that it creates is a byproduct, can be breathed in by people?
Correct.
And if they're an avid shooter, they get repeat exposure and that's how they get mesothelioma?
Yes, because the shotgun shell itself then explodes. It releases asbestos into the air and you're sitting there right with your head right next to the shotgun. Yeah. So you're breathing in that asbestos that's released.
Okay, sorry I had to pause on the shotgun thing because that's crazy. What are some other ones you throw out there?
One that is way more further back in time, usually if someone was alive in the 20s or 30s, are a certain brand of cigarettes that used to have an asbestos filter in them.
Oh, wow.
It was marketed as a brand new fandangled thing where our asbestos filters even more of the smoke and more of the contaminants.
Our asbestos filter, they even used the word?
Yes.
Now here's then my question for something like that. Did that company know?
Yes. I mean, I would think so. Because at that time there was already research and literature out there with the knowledge of lung cancer and mesothelioma being the cause. Maybe they didn't have as much knowledge due to the fact that it was mainly industrial exposures that you're seeing that research being done in. So it's possible that company didn't know when they were putting it in their cigarettes that it would have the same effect. But I think something stands to reason there.
And also, and sorry I keep on interrupting you, but correct me if I'm wrong, you don't always have to prove that the company knew, but you can show that they should have known. And that's a burden that you have to, that is an acceptable burden to reach, right?
That's correct. And so when I keep bringing up this literature, that's just a really overarching term for different medical, scientific, books, radio spots, public speaking that was done from the 1900s to now. So you're looking at a huge breadth of information. And a lot of times we have certain experts that are actually historians that during trial, we put them on the stand to educate the jury, because it is such a big question of how could these companies know if they didn't have any testimony to direct knowledge. So we show that these companies should have known based on the information that was available to them.
Right. You can't be a corporation and go la, 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 and close your ears. If you are selling products, you should be researching them. You should have departments that look into them that are well read. And if it's proven that there was clearly enough material out there for the average company to have found that information, that's enough of a standard to be liable, right?
Exactly. And then there's also a step beyond that. There are punitive damages that are available at trial. If you can prove, it's a more egregious standard of showing that the company did know and then continued using that asbestos and continued exposing workers anyway. So it's something that you see at in a case. We typically file a motion to be able to plead punitive damages, and then it's our job to show that to a jury that our client should receive a punitive damages award for what that company did.
708's actually texting in, and I'm sure you'd echo this, but many police station gun ranges were coated with asbestos. The shockwave from the gunshots would make that particles make those particles airborne. I mean, that doesn't stretch the imagination to think that's possible.
Does not stretch the imagination at all. I mean, just other household products, even tires, those contained talc, which was contaminated with asbestos, paint, joint compound, brakes, you know, things that the general public doesn't think of often. And especially when we get a client who has no idea where their exposure came from, we see what kind of makeup they used, what kind of foot powder they used, what kind of baby powder that was used on them or that they used themselves, to see if that was a talcum powder. Like I said, the historically talcum powder was often contaminated with asbestos.
Have there ever been clients that came to you with a mesothelioma diagnosis who you guys just really were not able to figure out where it may have come from definitively?
At this time, not as much. I would say in past decades, there was that huge question mark for many different clients, especially females, like I said before, who did not know where it came from. But now there's more answers, especially getting more research done into products like shotgun shells or into products like talcum powder, where we can provide more answers to our clients.
You mentioned 3,000 new diagnoses a year in the United States, right?
Yes.
Of mesothelioma. Is that number on the downtrend, the uptrend, or pretty steady? If you happen to know, sorry, I'm putting you on the spot here.
So I don't know exactly from the American Cancer Society if it's on a down or uptrend. I can say from what I see from people calling in, there is no downtrend. It's seeming to me like it is still sort of on an even keel, I guess you could say, continuing on a steady path. And we're also seeing many, many younger diagnoses, people in their 30s, 40s, 50s because of talcum powder use.
Ah, so it was used when they were a baby or a kid.
Correct.
We had a conversation with Christian, I believe, one of your colleagues, who talked a little bit more about that, because that's a whole other can of worms that we don't have time to get into. But you can go to WGNradio.com, go on the Let's Get Legal page, and it's just a week or two ago we had that conversation a little bit more in depth, because that one startles a lot of people. And again, a reminder, the vast majority of people that use these powders are A-okay, but it is something to be aware of. Man, 30, mm-hmm. Yeah. Because when you think of someone in the trades that maybe got to 80 or 90, it's still tragic and they're due what they're due, but they lived a full life. The thought of now that there's 30, 40, and 50-year-olds that are having mesothelioma is heartbreaking.
Yeah, I think anyone with a terminal disease like that, anyone who's 30, 40, 50 with young kids, who's still in the prime of their life. It certainly is more heartbreaking to see the impact on the family. Of course, death has an impact on every family, but someone that young, it's just really, really tough to reconcile.
Absolutely. Some people are commenting about the current administration's stance on asbestos. I know there was a little chatter about maybe pulling back some of the regulations last year. I think they have backed away from those claims as of the last I heard, or do you know something now that I don't?
I agree with that totally, that's where it's at. Trump had come out and announced that he wanted to roll back the ban. So chrysotile asbestos was the last form of asbestos to be banned in the United States, and under the Biden administration, that was done in 2023. Trump had planned to roll that back and allow the sale and importing of chrysotile asbestos again. He had come out with that statement. I have not seen any efforts or any doors opened for that to be possible yet, but I suppose it's still out there.
We talked to the folks, you guys, I forget which one of your esteemed colleagues came on to talk about that when that was happening, but that's important stuff. And I imagine it got a lot of pushback from a lot of people, understandably so. Anything else you want to mention today? Like that, I mean, I know these are terrible calls that people have to make to you, but you and your colleagues all seem like just so genuinely interested in, first of all, caring, listening, and being now a part of a family sometimes for a while to get justice for people. These are probably scary calls to make, but I imagine they find friendly voices on the other end of them.
Absolutely. And I would encourage anyone going through a lung cancer, mesothelioma, asbestosis diagnosis to call us as fast as possible. There is a statute of limitations on when you can file your claim. Typically, it's 2 years from the date of your diagnosis, so we encourage you to call us as fast as possible. We're happy to talk to anyone and talk through your exposures. Even if the answer is we don't think that you have a case, it's better to call and find that out than to have that lingering and wondering in your mind. And we work with so many clients that have these diseases, have these diagnoses, that we're familiar with it. We understand that you have chemo, that you have immunotherapy to go through. We work around your schedule totally when we move forward with these cases. And we completely understand that medical comes first and then the litigation comes in after.
Yeah. And you mentioned that 2 years of when the diagnoses happen. Does that clock end when someone has passed or no? Like if they die a year later, can their family, now knowing this, call you guys too?
I see what you're saying. Yes, the family can call. So it does not end when someone passes away. Then what would happen is we would have the family form an estate, and the estate would be the plaintiff. That would take the role of the plaintiff to then sue these defendants. The only thing is we do still need deposition testimony of what the asbestos exposures were. So we would need to find a coworker, or in the event of talcum powder exposure, talk with someone who was there when the person was using foot powder or baby powder or makeup on themselves.
You need it on record that someone witnessed or saw this person and that exposure.
Correct.
Because you don't have them to be able to say that. But it's possible, and you guys do this.
Absolutely. We do that all the time, and usually we can find a coworker, especially in the trades. Unions are fantastic at coming together, holding a meeting, finding coworkers from that phase and period of time, and usually we can become connected with someone who was a coworker of the decedent.
We've mentioned mesothelioma a bunch on this show and the one-for-one link with asbestos to that. Lung cancer is also something you guys fight for if there's an asbestos cause to it. And just because you're a smoker does not negate your ability to get justice if you were also exposed to asbestos. Do I have that all correct? That's from some part of my brain and conversation I've had with you guys in the
past. That's correct, too. You've been listening well at all our conversations.
Yes.
So if you are a smoker, many of our clients think, oh, well, cigarettes cause my lung cancer, I shouldn't call in, even though I worked in the trades for 50 years. That's not true. So asbestos exposure plus cigarette smoking causes a synergistic effect. And many physicians have written articles on this. You can do a quick Google search if you're interested in learning more in depth, but just the basics are those two types of exposures, both cigarettes and asbestos exposure, come together to multiply the factor and multiply your possibility and chances of developing lung cancer.
Okay. I just don't want people not to call because of that. Okay. We got through a lot, Michelle. We could do more, obviously, but we'll save it for another time. What number should people call you at directly if they think that they, and again, even if you're just wondering and you think, I don't know, just call. Why not? You're going to be able to tell them if you don't think you're going to be able to help them out in that thing. And then, like you said, it's closure. What's the number?
Absolutely. 312-201-4104.
Okay. 312-201-4104. Yeah.
Yes.
And we're going to VogelZangLaw.com. I'll spell that VogelZangLaw.com. This is what you guys do, and almost 100% what you guys do. And because of that, you know this stuff inside and out. So if you're going to go with anyone, you go with the people where this is what they do. VogelZangLaw. Michelle, it's been great to catch up again. Talk soon.
Thank you so much.